Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week I am investigating the cutting-edge thought and how we are evolving as a planetary race. Tonight's guest is someone who's involved in just that evolution, and he is probably one of the most conscious people I know who have had experiences with ETs, extraterrestrials, people from other realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this show is called New Realities, and I'll be talking to Jim Sparks tonight. Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm glad to be here, too. Thanks.
Thanks. Okay, Jim has a book out called The Keepers, and his website is also jim-sparks.com. And I know you're starting a foundation based on the messages and the information you've gotten from those experiences called Your Earth, which is a DVD. Tell us about Your Earth a little bit, Jim.
Well, yeah, these experiences have been going on now, Alan, for about almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 6 years of it were pretty much like what a lot of abductees claim to have experienced, traumatic, cruel, emotional experiments, semen extraction, a lot of cases, unfortunately, with women. There was a hybrid scenario going on where, they were part of that. Maybe they took the fetus after 90 days, and I didn't understand what was going on with any of it. It wasn't nice.
I understand. There is a lot of documentation about it, and I know after that 6 years, something shifted from being traumatized to understanding another level of what was happening here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just describe that.
Well, it's exactly what happened, and the difference between myself in that 6-7 years was this person happened to maintain better than 95% conscious recall, and so I brought everything back with me.
Let me just tell people, that is remarkable, because most people just go unconscious when they encounter the unknown like this. That's one question I did want to ask you. What do you think it is about you that stays conscious when everyone else just can't take that shift in reality?
Well, I mean, I've seen it in action. Clearly, some of the the experience has been very pleasant and evolved, so I don't want to make this all sound scary. I'm just planting a foundation here. But to answer your question,
yeah,
I've seen a couple of different scenarios that point to that. One of which is, we're talking about, for the most part, at least the ones that I've worked with, or worked with me by no choice of mine, are commonly referred to as grays. They're non-human intelligent beings. And when I want to emphasize non-human, so they don't have the same social structure, they don't have the same social skills, they're telepathic, they think 10 to 100 times faster, and they don't look like we do, and it's kind of scary.
Right.
So a lot of people, when they go through the abduction scenarios, there's a lot of positive things that are ingrained in them for the human species to evolve during that process. But there's some ugly experiments, and there's ugly things that go on. So
I describe it as going to the dentist. It's not a pleasant experience, but sometimes afterward you're happy. You know, it's sort of like that. If you didn't tell someone they were going to the dentist, this guy sort of did all this stuff, then you would be traumatized. But that's how I compare the experience that I've had. Does that make sense?
That's a good association. It's a very good association. And
right.
And then I've seen them take the physical memory away from people in some experiences just prior to them leaving or coming back. Another reason is they've chosen a few people, and I'm not trying to say I'm special by all means, because
you are, because you're one of the few that has conscious memory. I mean, I know in my own experience, I've known something happened, and I've had dreams, or let's say dream-type experiences, but I do not have a conscious recall for whatever emotional reason. I don't. So
yeah.
Anyway, it is unusual.
I can tell you something more on a positive note when it comes to that. Let's say that, or we'll take you for example, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's say tomorrow you're abducted. I still haven't found the perfect word for it, detained, abducted, whatever. You're pulled, okay?
Yeah.
And let's say it's a, Alan, let's say it's a two-hour experience that's pleasant. Pleasant in every way, shape, and form. You learned a lot. You interacted. It was you have a science mind. You have a curious personality.
Yeah.
And the interaction went well, and they enhanced you with knowledge on how the human species can evolve, be it the environment or actually evolve to join the galactic neighborhood. It's pleasant. It's wonderful.
Right.
A lot of times they'll take it away. I surmise from what I've experienced is due to the fact that the experience itself will get in your life's way. In other words, you'll get the message, but the messengers and the interaction with the messengers would overwhelm more than what the message is.
Mm-hmm.
So you would be returned home, and you would just be more overwhelmed by what took place in 2 hours for who knows how long that could reverberate down the road, a year, 2 years, 3 years, and kind of get in the way of something that's constructive. So
ever really take an experience away? I mean, it is somewhere buried in the person's deep subconscious mind. Experiences stays with you, right? I mean,
I think so to a certain degree. And one way I can relate it, let's say you're on board and you're asked to walk from point A to point B. Let's say you're asked to go from one gurney to an experimental station where they want to do something, and they ask you to do this, and so you go walking across the room on board, and you stub your toe, and it's very painful, okay?
Yeah.
And because I've seen this kind of stuff, and then of course you go ouch, and then you go to wherever they asked you to. Now they take the physical memory away. What I've seen sometimes is people will, it's almost like a deja vu. They'll be walking around somewhere and they'll stub their toe, and that pain will bring back 5, 10, or 15 seconds of that experience.
Huh.
So if it can, if, because it's associated with whatever it was you were doing. So to answer your question, I think it's still in your mind, yeah.
Well, Jim, let me tell you an experience. I did have aboard a ship, and to me it was sort of in a dream, but I was walking from one point to another, and I kept touching my third eye, and at that point, I felt like they said, or whatever, who they were, they said, we couldn't work with me anymore because I was too in control of my own self. So that was sort of the last experience I felt like I had in 1988, was this place of touching my third eye for whatever reason, and they just said they couldn't work with me anymore. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess it does and it doesn't. I mean, it makes sense to the extent that perhaps working with you in a conscious level where you would maintain the memory of the experience would not be a good thing. Well, it really is true, because if you're so focused on your agenda and what you think it means and the experience relative to, you know, what they think you should have, then you might hear a statement like that. But I got to tell you something about people, and it's kind of it's an experiment that I've been. We may get a little, something's trying to get into the phone, but it'll go away. It's an experiment that I've been doing. I've noticed people who had sightings, people who have more of than just a passing interest in the phenomena, and people who, of course, are abductees like yourself. There's a common thread that I'm seeing, and it's the fact that they are. They seem to be extremely sensitive about the Earth's environment, so I'm going to presume you are.
Well, of course. I mean, how could you not be? I mean, it hurt me to see garbage when I was in Hawaii. I felt compelled to pick up, you know, whatever I saw. But yeah, of course. I mean, any person living on the planet today has to be aware that you can't keep throwing garbage in your backyard.
Yeah,
anyway,
you can't keep trashing it. Right, so their take on it is clean up your own backyard before you can join the galactic neighborhood.
Right.
And they seem to be also more in tune with the betterment of the human species, the betterment of mankind, the human species finally evolving to the point of not dying, evolving to the point of joining the galactic neighborhood. You know, they're claiming that we have the resources, they're claiming we have the minds, they're claiming that we have the money, and if we could tie, if all the resources necessary, more than necessary are here in order for us to do such. And so I'm seeing, and of course 20 years ago I would ask these questions, or 15 years ago I would ask these questions, and I'm happy to see that there's a raised consciousness globally regarding the environment. It's not enough yet, but it's something.
Well, everyone, I was just talking to a guy in a pizza shop behind the he says, "Oh yeah, global warming." I mean, everyone is, it's on the consciousness of of the people out there on the street. Like, it wasn't 10 or 15 years ago, and now there is a critical awareness about the environment.
Sure.
But let me just get back to another point that you said. People wouldn't remember their experiences because it might change something in their life that would get in the way of who they are in the everyday world. But that didn't happen with you. Why not?
Well, one reason I know for this particular individual, meaning myself, of course,
yeah,
that they are, this group of grays are adamant about following particular family lines genetically for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So that was shown.
Uh-huh.
So I happened to fall in some genetic family line that, for whatever reason, dictated, well, this guy's going to have full conscious recall. I don't self-proclaim to be the ambassador for ETs. I don't claim to embrace alien culture. I have a healthy suspicion of their motives, but I'm seeing that it's definitely positive as the years have gone by. But it's like there's people there that can say, "Hey, look, I watched all this stuff going on, and I see what they're doing with people, and I'm pretty sure I think I know why they're taking the memory away, and I think they've allowed me to keep the memory so I can, like, talk to you and talk to the people that are in your listening audience now."
Well, we're going to get to that. I have one more question that I have to ask along those lines, because it's the whole reason I do a show called New Realities, and it's about when you meet beings like this, or you're pulled out of your everyday reality and plopped down into another totally different world, there's something about perception in the conscious mind that can't maintain its sense of itself, and I think that's where people go unconscious, and something doesn't happen to you for some reason. But for most people, you can see that it's a shock and a trauma, and post-traumatic stress syndromes do occur because the reality has shifted so drastically, you know.
Absolutely.
And so there's something about that I'm trying to understand for myself, and for, you know, that is my investigation into reality. How were you so able to adapt this totally strange? I mean, you know, you're pulled out of your bed. You see these weird looking creatures. You know it's not a dream. You're in a different environment. And how did you maintain your awareness?
Well, I mean, just the contrast in what they are and what we are extreme. And in the first 6-7 years, as I mentioned early in the show,
right.
Did I interrupt you? Were you going to say
no,
something?
No, that's it. You did say that, but go ahead, do that, because the first 6-7, you were traumatized.
Yeah, but here's why, okay? Yeah. For starters, they can think 10 to 100 times faster. That in itself is extremely intimidating. Before you can even reason a question in your mind, they're already responding to something that you're just starting to think of. They're 100% telepathic. All their technology is thought activated. They have the ability to travel dimensions. It's science. These beings can go from point A to point B anywhere in the cosmos with little to no time passing. They can be in one dimension and have their working essence in one dimension, which they would be invisible to us, and then work in this dimension.
Explain what you mean by dimensions. Like, what does that mean? A different matter frequency? What does dimensions mean to you?
Matter frequency would be I take things as scientifically as possible, Alan,
yeah.
But I'm not claiming to be a scientist because I'm not.
No, because a lot of people throw around the word dimension, and as far as I know, all I see is what's in front of me, but that's probably, I mean, of course there's you know, radio waves and all that, so explain what you mean by dimension.
Yeah, I can describe that, okay.
Yeah.
It's occupying the same space at the same time, and I don't want to say, because it's going to sound like a cliche, but there's, for lack of better explanation, mm-hmm. it's like you just said, it's a vibration. But however, to give you examples, they can be, now this again, this is science, this means you can be if you had the technology, okay? So I'm
right.
referring to the they because they have this. They
uh-huh.
can, for example, let's say they just wanted to be in a room observing people, but they did not want to be seen. 2% or 3% of their essence would be in that room, and they would be transparent. You wouldn't see them, but they would be occupying the same space in the same time that 97% or 98% in complete solidity. Now, be it a different vibration, be it whatever they do to manipulate matter, but I do know this, they create a field, and this field renders these marvelous abilities. And it's a field that's created through technology. It's a distortion. I've seen it power up. It almost looks like a fog in the air at first, and then it kind of dissipates. And then there's this invisibility factor. Now, let's say they just wanted to observe you. You're not going to see them. Okay. Now, let's say they need to move matter around in this dimension. In this
Like go through walls and bring people out of their
Absolutely.
Building.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's happened to me, and maybe you have memories of
it
happening to you.
I think it has happened to me.
And it can be very scary, but then when you realize it's science and it's not going to kill you, you start to observe more instead of being in fear. But
now let me ask you one more question around. So they can move matter. They can play with our physical, you know, world and move through it. Now what I've always thought, when you move in a different dimension, you're actually, your thought processes are shifted. Do you know what I mean? As in a different frequency of being, you're actually not the same person you were in this reality. Have you noticed that?
Well, in a sense, in a different way.
Yeah,
meaning, if I think we're on the same page when I say this, okay?
Yeah.
I know that they also use dimensions to travel. And I think the travel aspect of it is for shorter distances, meaning to go interplanetary. To go from one state to the next, hypothetically, if you wanted to. They use travel dimensions to do it. Okay, here's what I have seen over the years, that if when you're exposed to this technology for a lengthy period of time, meaning if the abduction scenario is a couple of hours, and if you're exposed to it in very frequently, like let's say you get pulled two or three times a week for a month, not so much that you're different when you're there, it's more like you're different when you come back home. There's a residual effect, and then this residual effect is not pleasant, but over time I've gotten used to it, and it doesn't scare me at all. It's interesting. If anything, I got to block it out. The residual
what
effect
is the
lasts
residual?
Several
what
days.
Is that?
You can see in ghost-like form other shades of these other dimensions once you're back home. You can actually see these places that you were in, and it's almost like a flashback or something. You can be walking somewhere, and you see shadows of these other places.
Mm.
It's like this vibration, however they change the frequency of your physical matter, however they change physical matter when they create this field, that vibration is like a tuning fork. Even though it's winding down, you're still in tune with those other dimensions. So you can literally see things in these other dimensions. And as the days go by, it kind of wears off and then it's gone. But if you're abducted constantly, and it's several things, you're A, they radiate an energy that's unworldly, that does different things to your mind. And
right.
being in these other dimensions through the technology, that residual effect can last pretty long time.
And so do you have that with you all the time now, that ability to see the kind of shadowy forms?
Well, I'm kind of close to the vest with this because, look, it's our business is already sounds cuckoo, okay, to the mainstream world. Okay?
Well, they're not listening to our conversation. because this audience is for the educated.
Well, that's cool. But when I say close to the vest, too, I mean that I do my best to sort something out and make it as factual to myself as I can, and then I go public, but I'm not holding anything back.
Right.
What I have noticed is that you can exercise. There's, and it's a personal thing that I do. I used to, but I've kind of backed off of it. That I did notice that there are muscles in the mind, so to speak, that lie atrophied, like any other muscle. If it's atrophied and we don't use it, we're not going to be able to get anything out of it. I have noticed that. Because it happened so frequently for me, I mean, it's been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these abductions in 20 years.
Are they still going on?
Time. It's evolved.
Okay,
sometimes
we'll get to that.
Okay.
Finish the muscles in the mind, because that's fascinating, too.
When they speak with you telepathically, you're using parts of your brain, because you're responding back in kind, that you don't normally use. And these atrophied muscles, they become exercised, or they're in exercise while you're there. When you get back home, they're still active, so to speak, and again, they start to wind down. What I've learned through the years is it's a focus or a way of thinking with the telepathic thoughts, and in essence, you become, and I never like to claim this, but you become a little more psychic. You start, there's a communication with these evolved non-human beings, even though you're not being pulled. It's mild, and it flashes in and it flashes out. You have more of a sense of what might be going on the other side of the globe. You got more of a feel for what's going on with the Earth's environment.
And for someone you're just connecting with, because I have a sense of being psychic because of these, and I could not read people's thoughts, but I can pick up psychic stuff. I mean, just from whatever, but I think it has to do with my experiences, so I do know
what
you're saying.
Well, I think it does. I think it does, and I think what you're saying is if you've been abducted, then I know that you're more in tune that way as a person. It just goes hand in hand. So if you know you've had experiences, you can count on it. But now I'll tell you something that's evolved.
Yes.
With that, it's a challenge because we're so used to verbal communication. We have two selves to our personalities. Now, I'm not pretending to be Dr. Freud here, but I'm just going to be very basic.
Uh-huh.
There's the outside Alan and there's the outside Jim that are communicating right now. When we meet people, they're seeing the surface of what we want them to know. What's really inside us, they have no clue unless the interaction becomes intimate and it becomes a trusted friend or a significant other. Then you start letting them in about what you may have done as a child or the things you feel guilty about or the things that you would like to repair.
Just the things you feel. Just your deeper feelings is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, when
okay.
you communicate with these guys or when they communicate with you, and this has evolved, man, it is like at first the most horrible feeling in the world because they do not see that outside you that we put up as a wall. They have no concept of it. They only have a concept of exactly what's inside you, and it pierces right through that, and it's like you're opened up on a table as if you were an earthworm in your biology class, and they took the pins and they were doing a dissection to show you what the inside of a worm looks like. It would be, I don't mean to be gross, but you know what I'm saying.
No, I understand. But isn't that inside you, us, isn't that more of a spiritual quality? And are you saying that they tap into the spiritual, I would say, soul essence of the person?
Well, I would say let's bring a little more to the surface.
Okay.
Let's say that you, I'm going to just give a silly example. Okay. Let's say that one day you were walking down the street and you were a teenager and you found a wallet and you didn't do the right thing. Even though you're a good person, you didn't do the right thing. You picked the wallet up, you took the money out of the wallet, and then you threw the wallet in the mailbox. You took the money, okay?
Right, okay.
That's something you have felt horrible about all your life, right?
Right.
It's something you don't tell your friends. It's something you don't tell people close to you. It was a life's lesson to you, and you're embarrassed by that you would do such a thing.
Right.
Now, here they are communicating with you. What do you think they see?
They see that stuff.
Yeah, and you just name it all.
But that's a sort of, I would say, a spiritual quality. I call it that. I mean, it's psychological, it's guilt, but it has resonance on a soul level.
It has positive effects. Yes, it does. Now, here's where it becomes positive. At first, to me, it was scary and negative because I don't want people to know or anybody to know some of the things I've kept to myself, you know. And then there's things you keep to yourself that you don't brag on that are very positive about you. And but it's both ways. So you feel very raw. But at the same time, what I've learned is evolved species is that if they can see the things in me, and I guess you can call that spiritual in a sense, then I can see the things in them at the same time too. So it works both ways.
So tell us, what did you see in them that they don't want to share on the surface?
A big picture. The big picture for me, what I see with them, and that's close to me, is it's going to sound political, it's going to sound philosophical, and not so much emotional. But it works. What I have learned about the evolved species on a galactic basis, the galactic neighborhood, the ones that are in the know and traveling there and so, and we're out of that picture, so to speak, is the fact that the reason they're not warring and the reason there isn't all this violence like there is with us, unfortunately, is the fact that you always know what your, I don't want to say enemy, but for lack of a better, what your enemy is thinking. There's no surprise attacks. It's a consciousness that's, even though there are different agendas, there are different species, there are different races within those species, just like there are human races, and they're going about their business. And some of these agendas may be in direct conflict with others, even though they're evolved. There's not going to be this warring fact because of the fact that this telepathy enables all concerned to know what the other person is thinking, and so you could never be taken by surprise. So it's kind of a neat way to keep the universe at bay, so to speak.
Well, the amazing thing about us as a species is that we have that capacity as well.
Yes, we do.
And so I think developing that would be the most important thing if we are going to become a galactic civilization, wouldn't you say?
Well, I have to agree with you, because I said the first six, seven years were traumatic. The years 7 through 13 were eye-opening because I began to see and participate in mass abductions where literally they were picking up millions and millions of people all over the globe and giving them an environmental lesson, so to speak. And I don't think it's a coincidence a lot of this environmental sensitivity that I see in people today is by mere coincidence, but I think a lot of it has to do with that campaign. But even more exciting is the fact that in the last 6-7 years, like years, let's say 13 to almost 20 now, through 19, so I'm working on 20, they have it's flowered to an actual plan to where, for the first time in our history, the human species can actually evolve, and there literally is a plan.
If
we follow it.
No, I follow that, but then what about this whole hybridization program that's been going on, I guess, is the 60s, 70s, 80s? How does that fit in with us evolving?
Insurance plan.
What do you mean?
Insurance. Insurance.
That's what you got, or is that what you're just guessing?
That's what I asked, and that's what I sensed, and that's what came back. And I don't just because one says something to me, it doesn't mean I believe it.
Go through this understanding the human race evolving and the hybrids being just an insurance.
Well, yeah, I mean it's not negative. Okay, for starters.
Right.
They've created beings, and I hate to sound gross and I hate to sound scary,
because
I've seen them. I've seen them. They've made they're closer to human beings. They're smaller than we are. They're frailer than we are. They're extremely much more environmentally sensitive than we are. They do not need to drive from the planet as much for energy as we do, and they tend to be a bit less emotional. And they tend to be highly much more intelligent. Now, what are these beings from all these years? In the event that we do not evolve, in the event that, unfortunately, if we self-destruct, then these things can inhabit. I say things. I guess I should call them people. I'm
well,
not used to calling them people.
Souls,
yet.
Don't they? I mean, they're not just robots. They are.
No, they're people. They're people. Their chins are a little pointy. Their mouths are thinner. They are telepathic. They do have hair on their head, but it's thinner. Their eyes are bigger than normal, but and they're not ugly. They're, you know, relatively attractive, but they're different. But they tend to be less emotional, like they are, and they tend to be much more intelligent. So in the event that we fail, which I hope we don't, then there's something to repopulate the planet with,
wait,
so to speak.
But let's say we don't fail. What happens to all these beings?
Oh, God, the cosmos is so big.
Wait,
it's so big. So many different agendas, so many other worlds. It's just...
So they have a plan B or plan A to go to another planet and populate that?
They have ways of taking care of them, absolutely. I
okay.
didn't see anything that, there that showed me that these people were under any duress or stress or concern about anything that where their future may be. I saw complete contentment.
Okay, because my understanding about the Greys was that they were taking our genetics because they had reached the end of their... race. They couldn't reproduce. They needed to breed back into some human qualities into them in order to keep evolving. It was for them as well that the genetics, the hybridization was happening.
Well, I've seen something along those lines that might lead one to believe it's that way, and there could be agendas that are. I've seen another agenda where they are taking in some of the qualities that we have as human beings and breeding it into them, so to speak, however they do it scientifically, because I only saw one campaign with these robotic beings. But anyway, don't let me get into that. It's
right.
removed from this. But nonetheless, where there's some emotional qualities, some paternal qualities, some maternal qualities that we have as humans, particularly how we interact, I think that they're, from what I've seen, they're breeding some of that into themselves to make themselves a better rounded or even more superior being, coupled with the high intelligence, a sense of emotion, a sense of feeling, and a sense of social interaction, which is something that these guys do not have.
Right. This
they
is
have
sort
no
of what
social
I get
skills.
From... Right, but the John Mack approach and the Bud Hopkins, they lean in that direction. That's been the big influence on me and that understanding from those guys.
Sure,
who,
sure.
Who, I mean, and so you don't, you're not totally in agreement with that.
I'm not in disagreement. Here's how it's the best way for me to answer it, and I say it like this a lot. Let's say alien agendas were 360 degrees. Each degree housed several agendas. And I'm privy to 2 or 3 degrees of that 360, and the focus of attention for this particular human has been within the scope of those 2 to 3 degrees and the agendas within, which are outside of that campaign. Now, I can't say that I don't come across things in the last 20 years that are not relevant to what they're doing with this person that I spot and see and glance at, and I can only stab in the dark. So, no, I'm not disagreeing with Hopkins.
Right.
I'm not disagreeing with, the God
right.
bless, the former Professor
John.
Mack.
Yeah.
But it has not been part of the agenda that they've had Jim Sparks in.
Okay, so let me just say then that what you're saying essentially is that they're agendas are very complex, and there's a lot more going on than perhaps our limited human perspective could comprehend at this point. They're only showing perhaps each person a small degree of the total picture of what's really going on here.
That's a good way to put it, Alan. And there's
yeah.
another thing that's going on, is that according to them, according to them, that the human race has reached this point in its history several times and self-destructed. Now, I'm not trying to sound negative because there's a positive note I'll get to here in a minute, meaning that we've populated the planet in the billions before. We've had the technology that we have now. We've even had the resources that we have today. and in minds and geniuses that are on this planet. And unfortunately, we self-destructed. A handful of us have survived for various reasons, just to start the whole thing over several hundred thousand years later, or maybe even longer in some cases.
Right.
So when we get to this point, it seems like what I'm getting from these guys is that there's another shot. We can either evolve or go the other way. And so the campaign, the interest, the why there's even more interest right now than there has been throughout our history in the last 10, 20, 30, 40,000 years, Homo sapiens sapiens, or maybe even longer, is the fact we're at that point again. And will we evolve is the question. And some steps have been outlined as to how we can do that.
And how can we do that?
I couldn't tie the two things together for many years until finally some answers started coming. One major campaign is to clean up our own backyard first, meaning environmentally speaking. An assignment that they had for me, if I chose to accept it, was to take on the rainforest.
Uh-huh.
And then a major...
Wait, they consciously said, sort of, Jim, your job is to help save the rainforest?
Absolutely, help save the rainforest.
Okay.
And that's what I do. See, I've watched them pick up people in mass abductions who are generally sometimes somewhat sensitive to environmental issues, and I've watched them enhance them with knowledge on how to solve these problems.
Uh-huh.
Again, take the physical memory away, put you back home, and when the timing's right, when it reaches critical mass, it's like you'll know what to do. You're not brainwashed. You'll have the option. You can choose to do it, but at least you will have clarity on, gee, what you can do. That's why we're forming your Earth. What your Earth intends to do is have more resources than you could possibly ever need, more money than you need, more of the best minds that this world has to offer, and for the first time, a global hands-on project to doing something with the environment, starting with the rainforest first. Okay.
And the rainforests, because they're the lungs of our planet.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And but there's something neat here, which I couldn't tie in before, that has come into the picture.
Okay.
They also emphasized this thing with amnesty. Not so much full-blown forced disclosure, so to speak, but amnesty, meaning that to create a legal avenue for these individuals who are in black ops, sanctioned and non-sanctioned agencies, of course, in total secret, who have developed with ETs, because in some cases the higher black ops levels work in total harmony with extraterrestrials without the government not even having a clue. 99.9% of our government at face value doesn't know what's going on with those. They're,
right.
they're separated from that.
Yeah, some people say all the technology we have is reverse engineered through the ET ships that we found and working with these ETs.
At level two. I break it down in three simple levels. The government at face value, that's the government we deal with every day, and that's why it's a beautiful cover-up, because you can beat them until they're blue in the face, and until you're blue in the face, and they're going to say, I don't know, okay?
That's right.
You're going to have the second level that retrieves crash disks, that back engineer, and who have developed some pretty phenomenal technologies, and I think a lot of the sightings that we see now are probably part, at least in part, that, okay?
Yeah.
Then you got this other level, and this is the level that the amnesty, I think, is really for. It's the first level of government, the second level that I just described, have no clue what this third level really possesses.
Right.
They possess the ability to go from point A to point B in the cosmos. They possess the ability to clean the ocean, to rejuvenate the rainforest, the technology, to rejuvenate the air. They have the technologies that they've gotten from ETs and have worked in conjunction with, and that's the level where I'm seeing, through my abduction experiences, a growing majority that would like to bring this stuff forward. But they're
scared.
What
are they waiting for?
They're scared. Now, here's the scary part.
How could they be scared if they have all that power and knowledge? It doesn't make sense.
I'll tell you the best that I've surmised, and if you put yourself in their shoes, you might see it this way.
Okay.
These people aren't all bad. Most of them are good, okay? But they are committed individuals who've sworn to secrecy, who have sworn to protect, particularly in our country, the national security of the United States, And their whole life is never to come forward with these things for several reasons. But here's what they've had to do in the last 40 to 60 years. And when people get close to the truth, they're first discredited. If that doesn't work, they're maimed, or they become sick. If that doesn't work,
I mean, they actively go out and do something harmful to these people.
Yes, huh? or they die. They're killed.
Right, or they're killed.
Okay.
Killed. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, that is outside the law. That is creating harm to law-abiding citizens who have come close. They've broken the law. That's murder, in a sense, okay?
Right.
It is. There's no other way to look at it.
Right.
You come forward with this stuff is coming forward saying, I may be responsible for, you know, for 300 or 400 deaths globally, and most of them here in my own country.
Mm-hmm.
What will you do to me?
Uh-huh.
Knowing that what we've done to bring this stuff out. So the amnesty bill, so to speak, I'm calling it a bill, but not necessarily,
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Is an avenue for them to come forward voluntarily, not for spiritual reasons, but for practical reasons. They can't be prosecuted. They can't be accused. They're
and
clean.
The other part of the amnesty is if our government was in knowledge of the millions of people that were being abducted, they would be held accountable.
Exactly.
And
you
so,
got it on the head.
I get it.
Now,
okay.
You want to know why you're so smart? You're smart because E.T., okay, and E.T., again, I have non-human intelligent beings, have said exactly what you just said. So they're saying, do this. Now I'm thinking, well, God, guys, how do you tie in amnesty with the rainforest and getting the truth out so the species can evolve? Well, here's how they see it. Step one, go to the rate. We got to have a total global hands-on project. We got to get the world into this. And I think we're almost ripe for it. That's what your Earth is about. If you go on, I don't want to sound like a commercial, but if you go on my website, it's jim-sparks.com or jim-sparks.com, whatever you're more comfortable with.
Uh-huh.
We put together a package for your listeners,
okay,
which is a DVD, and it's my book, The Keepers. And in combination, we discounted it pretty good, and I put a letter in there about how you may want to be involved in your Earth after you read the material if it so moves you. But the point is, here's the outline of the plan. Rainforest and amnesty, how does it tie in? First thing they claim to do, suggest we do, is literally buy out all that property. Buy as much rainforest, Amazonian land, equatorial land, buy it all.
And you mean the people with money in the U.S., you're saying, should buy
all
that
of
land?
Us. All of us. Let me
give
you a small example. I believe it was Ecuador, the newly elected president of Ecuador, for example, publicly said that he's got 1 million hectares of sensitive rainforest land in his country that oil was discovered. It's got $30 billion approximately in oil assets if they develop that property to derive the oil. He said that if the global community is willing to purchase it, then they would own it, and he would not go in there and get the oil. $30 billion, if you just take America and you divide out that between the population of our planet, and you throw in a few companies, corporations, it'll run us about $5 or $8 a person. If you were to involve government behind it, it might only involve pennies per person. If the global community looked at these areas as sensitive to the security of life itself and want to protect it that way. So the first step is to buy it. If they offer $30 billion, they suggest buy it for $40 or $35 or $45. So there can never, ever be a claim that we swindle it out from some up-and-coming developing country. You want to give them more than they ever expected.
What about some place like the UN declaring this a planetary sanctuary or something along those lines?
Sure, sure. See, what your Earth is going to do is pull in the best minds that this globe has to offer to think tank the best way to handle this global problem. Look what you just came up with in just you and I talking. Imagine the geniuses that are out there. If they had something that they could pour themselves into and believe in. Okay, and for sake of time, I'll jump to step two.
Okay.
Step two is to, once these properties are owned, is to house these properties with the Indians who are indigenous to that geographical area. Put the Indians that are indigenous to it to be stewards of the property. Mm-hmm. That's the second part. The third part, and here's where it really involves the global community, and I'll get to the amnesty thing where this comes in. Mm-hmm. The third step is to take those millions of people who are thrashing and burning and take and eating away the rainforest for inadequate housing, lack of knowledge of crop rotation, so they just keep going and going and going, almost like a virus or a bacteria, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those people, for their labors in restoring the rainforest, the same ones who've been thrashing it, get a plot of land outside the rainforest with adequate housing, proper farmland, taught how to rotate crops and so forth. This is where the global world comes in, contributing to this. So now their labors are used to rejuvenate the rainforest versus what they have been doing, and in turn for their labors, they get something for it. Now we own it. Now we got the Indians who are indigenous to it, who are the stewards of it, and now we have the people who are starving to death, the poor, the peasants of the world who've been thrashing and burning. They got a decent place to live with food, and in return, their labors, for their labors in restoring, they get this. And, of course, the world is contributing funds to their well-being, because it is a concern of all of us. Now,
wait, is this a plan you got from the ETs, or
yes,
something you fabricated
not due to your experiences? Not from Jim Sparks.
Okay.
This is due to the experiences. Okay.
Okay.
And the simplest things these guys used to tell me over the years, I would just like, because I was mean. You know me personally a little bit. I was mean to these guys because I thought they were mean to me, and anything they told me I said was bunk, and I'd yell at them. But over the years, I start thinking about the things they suggested, and I said, man, these things just make too much sense. I got to tell people.
Right.
Okay, now here's where amnesty comes in. This one I think you'll really love.
Okay.
Now you've got the world, for the first time in its history, with a hands-on global project, with these steps that are outlined, you've got an amnesty bill in place. Now these black op people can come forward with technologies as such, because now the world's in one frame of mind. They know they're not going to get hurt. They know they're not going to get killed. They're not going to be executed. They're not going to be charged. They're not going to be held accountable, as you said. Number two is that, let's say that there's 1 million hectares of rainforest land that was injured, and with current technology, it would take 50 years or 75 years to restore. These guys, these black op guys, come forward with amnesty. They have technologies that can do that job in 6 months.
That's the reason they're not coming forward with their technology, because it implicates them in a worldwide crime, in a sense.
Beautiful way to put it. And at the same token, now if the world is motivated for the first time, look, you'll never get everybody in on the same picture. You know that. But if you get the majority of the globe, if any normal person would want to do something about this, and any way a normal person can contribute to the restoration of our environment to make this end for the now. But see, here's where we can evolve, according to them, because once these technologies come out to restore the rainforest, they got the same technologies that'll take the pollutants and poisons out of all the world's seas and oceans fast. There's technologies
and the ETs will not do it for us. We have to definitely come together as a unit, as a singularity, in order to do this.
That's the picture. And now we can evolve, because then we can start conquering things. Now they'll start getting their hands in on what we are, because now we're doing something for ourselves, and we're doing it in a global way. And, man, you couldn't have hit it any better on the head when you said that, because of the fact, when you fly by this planet, if you're a highly intelligent being and you hover over this planet in your spacecraft with 6 of your comrades, and you look down on it, you're looking at a hornet's nest. When you think about it. Even if you look at all the separate positions that individuals take, all 6 billion of us, there's a lot of us that have all these things in mind that we're talking about, but the bulk of us we're not there. Governments are constantly changing. Power is always shifting. So you're looking at a hornet's nest.
Well, let me just say one thing. As you're talking now, I'm hearing this high-pitched sound that I used to hear when I was a child coming through one ear. It just was there for a second, and And I think that was somehow connected to those experiences I had. So as you were saying that, I started to hear that high pitch.
That stuff happens to me, too.
What is that?
I think to some degree there's an association with sort of a, well, I do know that in symbolic form they can show you a symbol, or there's a symbolic form of transmitting data and a vast amounts of it in a short period of time. And I think some of those waves, those frequencies, that because I hear that too, it shifts in my ears from time to time.
Right.
Is literally, look, I'm not claiming this is what this is. I'm saying
no,
I know for myself.
I'm curious what you make of it, yeah.
Yeah, one side will be doing it sometimes, or both sides will be doing it at the same time, and then it'll shift over just one side, and clearly there's a shift, and you notice it. And I think it's a, I think it's a positive thing. It's you're getting data. You're not consciously aware of it, but it'll unwind itself like a slow tape over time. So I think it's a communication thing.
So getting back to the environmental thing, then most people perhaps aren't ready to hear the ET angle, but they can get behind the environment and start to, and they are. People are aware that there's a global warming, whatever that means, and you know, something's going on. Maybe it's global cooling. Who knows what's going on? But people are much more aware of the environment, and I think there are people with a lot of money. I mean, I know Sting puts on a rainforest concert every 2 years, and he gives a lot of money to preserve the rainforest. I mean, there's people with money who come forward with this.
Absolutely. And I've had people offer, influential people, influential groups, and here's what I'm telling them. That's why I say if you go on that website at jim-sparks.com, the Your Earth non-for-profit foundation is intent to be global. Its intent is to have, see, we need a center. That's the bottom line here. It's the way they're seeing it is we need one center. I'm in horrendously deep and humble myself in praise to these people like these rockers and these influential famous people with money who are contributing the way they're doing. And it's 100% in the right direction. This is not contrary to that, but their claim is to have one center, one nucleus, so it's, there's nothing complicated about it. Everything is dumped into that center. Now, here's the thing they say, and I said, hey, man, this is stupid.
This is what the ETs are saying? We need one center to maintain it?
Yes.
Okay, okay, go ahead.
That way, we're all of like mind with the resources.
Okay.
And we can pull in, not only would we be pulling in the money, they say, and have more than what you need. Make this thing, and I'm calling it Your Earth, and Your Earth came to us 10 years ago through this abduction stuff. But nonetheless, it's called Your Earth, and it's to have more resources than it could possibly ever need to accomplish all of this. It has to bring in more money, but one of the best parts that they advise is it brings in all the minds of the world, the geniuses, the people who, the movers, the shakers, the ones that can think out a plan. And inevitably, it'll pull in government because the globe has to see this planet as anything environmentally sensitive would be considered a direct threat if anybody chooses to harm it to the whole globe.
Right.
So that involves military in a positive way, in a sense, to protect it. It involves government, and then it's grassroots, which involves the citizens of the world. Once you have that together. Now these technologies will come out that these black op people have. Now, the beauty part of it is, Alan, is the fact that some of the other periods of times when we could have evolved and we self-destructed, ET primarily had the technology. But since we're kind of lucky, even though these black operations have been doing this under our noses and over our heads in secrecy, they've developed technologies, but they're in human hands. We're not pleading to ET to release this stuff to us. People have this stuff. And so once these people realize that some of this stuff can come out, and it is a little bit complicated because a lot of it is tied in with national security and defense and things of that nature.
Well, but really, we don't really have to defend ourselves against anybody except maybe our own government at this point.
I hear you, man.
But
I hear you.
So You're saying going back to that one center, so you want like an office building in Manhattan, or what do you say a center? What are you looking for?
Well, here's the beauty with how I'm seeing your Earth through suggestions on their part, is that where should your Earth be located will be determined on the principles involved, the members of the board, because what we're doing is let's try to remember something. Where we fail throughout human history is if we've had many good leaders throughout our history, and I'm talking tens of thousands of years, who've directed people in different ways, but pretty much the results end up being the same. We still war, we still die. What we need is to have these great individuals, right down to the common person like me, your Earth needs to house the minds to structure where should we locate your Earth. Now, I'm in Nevada, obviously. I'm forming it here as a nonprofit in Nevada at this moment because I'm not going to go anywhere else but where I live. But by the same token, once your Earth starts pulling in the resources, which people want to do, we got people that are stand ready and it's building, pour in the resources of monies, pull in the resources of the greatest minds that this planet has in this day and time, they get together. Now you have one Mongolia's resource of unlimited funds and unlimited thinking.
Isn't Bill Clinton doing, I mean, maybe he's not conscious of the ET, but his global initiative seemed to deal with some of this. I don't really know what goes on there, but I know he meets once a year and talks about the global situation.
Sure. Can
we get him involved?
I think so. I think, and I'm very, here's where I'm really fussy. Maybe it's why, you know, I got the job, so to speak, at least to kick the thing off. And, of course, I want to be involved as the rest of my life.
Uh-huh.
But I'm extremely fussy about making sure that this center, the foundation of this center, has no flaws. I want to make sure that its mission and its goals are well-stated, well-defined, what its intentions are. And then there's an area that you have to be very sensitive to because you don't really want to push too hard the ET essence of it. Because, you know, a lot of people might consider that to be, you know, too off the wall. They don't want to involve themselves. So I think what's beautiful about it, and you even said it yourself, is we start off with this rainforest thing and we get that thing going globally. That's got nothing to do with ET, so to speak, okay?
Right.
And at the same token, it's creating an amnesty bill. And then now the stage is set for all this stuff to come forward. So where should it be located? That's going to be determined by the geniuses that we pull into your Earth to where they feel that the best minds that the world has to offer, where it should go. So, yeah, you're talking about the Bill Clintons. You're talking about the I don't know if you follow. I used to. I'm in deep admiration, for example, Mikhail Gorbachev.
You know, I just met someone who – he wrote, a friend of mine published a book called Water Voices, which has a lot of world leaders writing about the resources of water, and he has a letter in there to the people of the Earth about preserving our water. So
yes,
I have a friend who's connected with that, and he's just published a letter of Gorbachev.
Well, think about what a great man he is, and the reason I say such a great man is because the former Soviet Union was a nemesis, and it was a scary, powerful nemesis at that. I think you were around in those days.
Oh, I totally agree. He's an amazing. He changed the planet. I would say more than anyone.
And what else did he do? He relinquished his power to do that. So I can't, you know, more self-sacrifice. And there are so many things that those former premiers have done in the past to stifle anything like that, which is a lot of murdering, killing, maiming, and bloodshed.
I think he's an amazing
reverse.
Person, and you know, should be really honored on a global scale. So, what would you want to do with Gorbachev?
Whatever he wants to do, because he is globally environmentally and concerned, and so it's the Your Earth Foundation intends to have these people come together and make decisions and draw out plans. So what ET says here is, sure, like what you said, you got this one doing that, you got this group doing this, you got this, and all those are positive things, but really it's not 100% completely united front. Now, that's a simple notion, but when you think about it, divided is not nearly as good as united. So if it's 100% united and you have all the resources dumped into it, and then you have different kinds of minds that we want to bring in. We want to bring in legal minds, because each and every one of these countries are going to have different laws as to really what ownership of property is. Now, the big picture for this get-together kind of thing would be is once you've got a hands-on project involving people in the globe, so you can go almost to any common person on the planet that can communicate, okay, other than maybe in some isolated areas that don't know what's going on in the world. If you bring up your Earth, they're going to say, yeah, here's a ruble, or here's a penny, or here's a sack of rice to feed them. What we want this thing to be is something that every single person that hears your Earth is going to know that there's every intention for it is for the species to evolve. Now that starts pulling in business, that starts pulling in government, and that starts pulling in with the global national security to protect all this stuff. And then data, technology.
I'm going to connect you with some water conservation people, and there's a whole decade of water at the UN, so they probably would love to be involved in something like this.
Well, I can give you something. It's called jimsparks888@yahoo.com.
Okay.
What I've asked people sometimes when I do conferences, and I'm almost at the point to really go national or global with it, but I'm going to mention it to you on your show.
Okay.
If you go on, it's an email, jimsparks888@yahoo.com.
Okay.
If, however you feel led in this area,
uh-huh.
If you write a note, send it to that email. Do not expect a response for probably a pretty, you know, decent length of time, because what I'm doing is gathering the data bank with that.
Uh-huh.
So that when your Earth is pretty much in its, okay, we're ready to start stages or go, which we're getting close, then we're going to have people who will go into that data bank, and on a one-on-one basis, we'll see what people want to do, and then we'll offer what we're doing, and then if they want, there's no pressure, but if they want to respond to something that we're doing, then there's the ability to do it. So if who you have in mind would go into Jim Sparks, and I'm telling that, of course, to your listening audience,
okay.
jimsparks888@yahoo.com. That's not my website. It's nothing like that. It's just a where you can say, hey, and even when I go to conferences, Alan, at the end of them, I'll say, hey, you know, I've noticed that people want to do things. Write me a paragraph as to where you feel led, if you feel led, and here's where you can do it. So once we get your Earth off the ground, those people will be contacted to see what involvement they may care to get themselves involved with.
Well, how close are you? Are you 6 months, 1 year away? How close?
I think we're within 6 months.
Okay, and you have a staff of people that you're actually...
I'm starting to build it, and I'm doing it with my humble means. Now,
right.
But again, I'm extremely conservative on one side of this, meaning that I'm very, very sensitive to it being formed 100% properly. So that's the reason I'm not taking money yet. I'm in the initial stages where I can start delegating work that needs to be done to properly form this. I got to have the legal structure properly, not just the tax exempt, and we want to go beyond it, so that when important from the regular person who has, you know, poor people, when they give something, they're giving a big part of their life, even though it might be a little thing to people with money and resources. So your Earth wants those people to know that any little effort they make, or any big effort they make, any labor they make, any pennies, any monies, anything they give to this, it's 100% right. And we want it to attract, like a magnet, the most powerful, influential people, corporations possibly, businesses, governments, that they know it's sound, it's solid, it's clear, and then we'll be ready to take in the stuff. Where I fall between a rock and a hard spot right now is I'm having to do this out of my own resources, even though there's people who are saying, yeah, we're willing to give put this to it, not doing this to it. I'm getting close to even accepting it for that. So that's the stage I'm in. So I've done this out of my own time and out of my own resources. I'm not trying to get a pat on the back, but I'm doing it just to be careful. And
well,
I've been.
I'm going to introduce you to some people. This guy, William Marks, published The Water Voices, and some other people are very concerned about the environment. But let me just then ask you, so we get the planet together, we save the Earth, And is that when the ETs show up, or, I mean, what are they waiting for?
Well,
all of this?
You know something? They did follow, according to them, okay? Again, I have a healthy suspicion of what's said, but over the years I'm seeing some things pan out, and sometimes the hard way. According to them, it's really making sense to me, and it may to you and your audience, is that they did follow proper protocol 40, 60 years ago.
With Eisenhower.
With world leaders. You'll never hear me mention names too much when it comes to that.
Okay.
I've learned that, you know, you come up against walls, so you'll hear me say the positive, like Gorbachev or what this one did
Right. Okay, so they did do protocol. They did approach our politicians and say, we would like to work with you, right?
Exactly, and even worse, which was even should have been better, but even worse in those times, according to these guys, again, I'm talking non-human intelligent cultures,
right.
They gave technologies in exchange for us not developing any more nuclear warheads, for us not going into the biological stuff war,
and for us not going back to the moon. We seem to have let that whole space.
I stay away from that one.
Okay, but it's suspicious, right? I mean,
I stay away from that one
because you know too much.
I stay away from that one.
I've
learned throughout the years to stay focused on what I think it's going to take according to them to evolve the situation, and I start going there. And as tempting as that is, okay?
I'm just curious. It seems so
weird. I almost want to say I love you, man, but I can't tell you, okay?
We'll have to talk about it in private, maybe. But, no, it sounds really... So, anyway, at some point, they come forward, you know, and they say, we're here? I mean, what happens?
Well, here again. So they did this, and of course what we turned around and did was made weapons and made money with it. Okay? Now,
right.
When I say we, whoever they approached, and of course it led to all the secret agencies and yaddy-daddy-daddy.
Right.
And their
right.
wisdom. There's another technology that was given, and I it's going to sound almost so simple and plain, but free energy without
right.
pollution.
I mean,
100%. Now, here again, that's a scary thing to these groups that got this stuff. As far as what about the money flow on the planet and the way
the oil companies, all that.
But there was a solution given for that, and it still will apply down the road. This is before ET makes an appearance, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, how do you handle the greed of the world when it comes to something that's free energy? Well, there's a plan for that. Hold on just a second. There's making a racket here. I want to shut it off. Give me a second.
Okay. I'll just tell people I'm talking to Jim Sparks. He's the author of The Keepers. He is also the head of the foundation called Your Earth, which he's been talking about saving the planet, saving the environment. And he has DVDs. You can also check his website. I'm just reintroducing you. Jim-Sparks.com is your website. So... go ahead. So you're saying...
For example, how do you handle greed when it comes to this free energy thing?
Okay.
Hypothetical example. Well, for one thing is you do not want to take the power from the powers that be. You do not want to take the money and the wealth from the same powers that be. Because that is a horrendous, huge wall that is not going to allow that to happen.
Even when they see, look, we don't need the money, we have everything we need. I mean, it's a psychological thing again, I guess.
It's greed.
Yeah.
And they have every reason in their world to defy anything like this to the point of horrible things.
Well, that's the whole war in Iraq is because of that, obviously, right?
I think so.
That's
just my opinion. I stay out of the politics.
Most, it's a lot of people's opinion, and it seems like it's not even an opinion. It's obvious, but anyway.
Well, there are places in the world that there are more horrific things done to human beings from governments that we don't do anything about. And there's
right.
no oil there, right?
You know, a friend of mine was just in Burma
and
saying how awful it was there. We need to clean up our act as a planet. So you're saying, the oil companies, they don't want to release their hold on their greed corporate wealth.
And it's just not oil. It's, take something simple like a utility company. Right. Providing power, that especially it's publicly held, that's providing power for a major city. You think it wants to lose its profits? No.
Except if we reorganize the planet in terms of a new paradigm and restructure the society, there's room for free energy.
Well, there's a way to do it where they get richer and more powerful, and yet it accomplishes the global goal. According to these guys, and this, here's another one I said, man, this is so stupid. It's so simple, it's stupid, but then, you know, I was the stupid person for not talking about it sooner. So here's...
Wait, so the ETs say, look, Jim, this is how we're going to integrate free energy and not have the corporate powers suppress it. They'll get what they want. Is this what they said to you?
Oh, yeah, and yes, but let's remember what we have here, okay? So it doesn't sound so otherworldly so much. In these abduction experiences and interactions, it's countless times that I've seen military personnel, paramilitary personnel, civilian personnel. I've seen
they were in on the abductions, or they were being abducted.
They're in on the abductions with the ET, working side by side. I've seen even rank and. These people never hid their faces or hid their intentions. And it's like, again, this is the world that Jim Sparks is in his abductions. The memory's not taken away.
Uh-huh.
There are good people involved here, but here's the point.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's a lot of negative stuff, and I'm not going to pretend there's not, okay?
Right.
And there's victims
right.
here, and we all know that. But nonetheless, and that's part of the amnesty thing. Again, not for
right.
spiritual reasons, but for practical.
Right.
But here, a simple plan, okay? You've got... You project it out, let's project it out 50 years, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All these major energy holders, be it greedy, be it not, be it powerful, don't want to lose what they got. So here's what you do. Can any business in your mind, put yourself in your business, put your business cap on for a minute. You don't have to have a degree in this.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any business that can confidently say that they will be in business 50 years from now? 100%.
Well,
guaranteed.
I mean, you know, I guess a business that really we need, you know, like the food business, you know.
Yeah, well, that's true. We got to eat, but nonetheless, it's hard for a business to, other than the basics, but it's hard for any business to say, I'm going to be in business 50 years from now. Every year is a new challenge, and they set up goals and profit ideas and all
right.
of this.
Okay, I follow you. So it's hard for that kind of projection. Okay.
Yeah, so what the suggestion is, now bear in mind, this is people and ET, okay, when I say these things. So a lot of times when I say ET, it's not ET solely. Sometimes it is, and a lot of times it's what I'm about to say. It's a conjunction between them, and it's transmitted to people like myself, and here I am talking to everybody,
uh-huh.
but the point is they get the new technology, and they own it 100%,
okay.
say, the first 5 to 15 years. Whatever your Earth determines with the geniuses and the minds that it has, they literally have it. It is theirs. How do you do the transformation? A small example. Let's say you got a power plant that burns coal and oil to produce power for 2 million people, and it's for profit. Okay, now you can put something the size of a 10 by 10 shed right next to that power plant, this type of technology,
uh-huh.
which will do the same thing.
Right. Okay.
Now, but they own it. They control it. Now think of all the money they're going to make because, A, they're not going to have to burn oil. They're not going to have to burn coil. They're not going to coil.
Right.
And
you.
Coil, whatever that might be. And
it's
and
coal and oil together.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was good.
And so, actually, this sounds like the plan that Hal Puthoff, who's developing zero-point energy, told me if they do find how to get energy from the vacuum, they're going to have a slow integration process for this kind of free energy he's looking to.
Well, there you go. So no telling what he connection he may have that consciously
well, I don't know
or
what
subconsciously
but he's
aware.
Looking
yeah.
for free energy, and he said this is a way that there's a plan to reintroduce it so people don't get uptight and weak. But he hasn't found it yet. He's still...
You give it to them. You give it to the power companies. You give it to
yeah,
the oil
yeah.
companies.
Right.
Now, when I say give it to them, there's that. It's a global hands-on. They just can't run with the ball kind of thing. But yet, But it could double their profits, which I see it doing since they won't have to buy coal and all of this stuff to
right.
do that. Okay,
right.
Now they got the free energy. They control it 100%, so to speak, the profits, for whatever period, 5, 10, 15 years. Now maybe let's say years 10 through 20, they give back, they only control 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Years 20 to 40, they get 50, don't quote me on the exact percentages.
Right,
they get,
right, right.
They get 50%. Now at year 50, they own a flat 20% of it without ever having to work or do anything for the rest of their lives and whoever they want to hand it down to, and on and on and on and on. They got
it
a flat 20%
sort of it.
It's
ridiculous to placate these greedy individuals at the expense of the whole planet. It gets me a little upset.
Well, it does,
I mean.
But let's think about it, okay?
Yeah.
Because greed is going to fight us.
Mm-hmm.
Greed is our inevitable reason, a big reason why the human species doesn't evolve. So we have to turn that energy around to work for us. Who cares when you think about it 50 years from now, particularly if we
yeah.
evolve, whether they got 20% of it or not.
But
if
think
the
of
world
all the people
changed.
That are starving and suffering because they have to work hard in order to pay for the money to buy the coal and the oil.
Right,
and
all the horrific things that
yeah,
they
put
under the
ground. Yeah, just think how awful
for.
It is when we could be living in a paradise with free energy and people living a much more pleasurable and enjoyable life.
Well, absolutely. But, you know, economy is what we are. The world really is business. A lot of it's dirty. A lot of it's clean.
Yeah, but what I'm getting to is why don't the ETs show up after, let's say, we get the Your Earth thing happening and say, okay, guys, we're the greater power here. We're going to, you know, do away with these separate governments agreed, and here's the technology that everyone can... I mean, do they not want to get involved that personally in our planetary affairs, or what's the problem? Why don't they just come forward, or is that just a ridiculous
notion? Well,
no, request?
It's not a ridiculous notion. It goes back to the same thing. It's a good notion, and there's nothing wrong with that. It goes back to, right now they're looking down at a hornet's nest.
Yeah, so you're saying, okay, but I want to know when the ETs, I don't like to keep going, but I feel like you might know, when will they actually become a common knowledge and be openly seen by everyone on the planet?
When we've evolved to the point where they can interact that way.
Uh-huh. So that might be another 50
That could be years. Just a few years from now. I'll tell you something that amazes me, too.
Yeah.
I'm 53. How old are you?
Do
you not say on the air?
No, it's okay. I was born in 1956.
Okay. So
almost your age. Yeah.
Okay, so you saw the Berlin Wall go down.
I did, yeah.
Okay, I don't mean to go back to this Gorbachev thing again, but I'm not.
No,
but
but
the point is, I never would have dreamed in my wildest imagination that event could have taken place the way it did.
Well,
you remember the Iron Curtain? I figured that was there forever.
Well, another thing Al Gore mentions, he said you never would have expected 50 years ago that Germany and France would be sharing the same economy, and Italy, and then the whole European Union. We are evolving, and there are signs of our evolution.
There is.
So I totally am with you about, you know, South Africa. You know, who would have thought that would have changed? We are progressing on our planetary point towards a higher, you know, progression of humanity. I think we're on the path. You know, there is change and there is hope, and
we're ripe. Yeah, we're ripe, Alan.
But so they might now. What do you think about this whole press conference that happened in Washington at the press club on November 12th, where all these military guys came forward and they asked the governments of the world to release their secrets and open up the UFO files? I mean, how does that tie into all this?
Now, you're asking me my opinion, and
yeah,
that's
what
I'll
opinion.
Give you. Okay,
yeah,
my
yeah.
opinion is that clearly that's a step, a good step in the right direction when you have that kind of credibility backing you.
Uh-huh.
Who can deny people with impeccable records, career records, holding
yeah.
such important positions for 20, 30 years or longer, and coming out and saying this, and coming out and saying that. I think, again, the challenge there is the fact that there's several humongous brick walls. And if you can kind of draw a picture in your mind, see a brick wall that when you look to the left, it goes as far as your eyes can see to the left and right, and it's as high as, it's so high you can't even see the top, and you're standing in front of this brick wall, right?
Okay.
Look at that brick wall again as the agencies that do not want to reveal the truth.
Right.
Okay.
Gotcha.
All right. Then go back about 100 feet behind that brick wall and see the same brick wall, the same size behind it, and then see about three or four more, okay?
Okay.
Now, here's all these credible individuals standing in front of this wall barking the truth, okay? But what does this brick wall think? It's so huge, it's so human, it's the conscience of the people, which is the brick wall, that are on the other side.
Right.
They don't want us to know.
And why? Because of this greed factor, or because...
That, and what are you going to do to me? And a lot of it is tied in. Now, it's all different levels. Now, that first brick wall is the level of national defense. Because, and I'm not saying that's not impenetrable. Hey, I would love to see that group win an amnesty thing before I do, or before Bob does, or before this other group does. You know, whatever it takes. I don't need no label. I have to have no claim to fame to say, hey, gee, I was a big part of making this change.
Right.
As long as it happens, that's achieving the goal.
Right.
But these guys have everything to, when I say guys, government, black op, that's
right.
The next wall. Okay, so you've got the back engineering wall, then you've got the black op wall, and then you've got the greed wall, then you've got the national defense wall, and then you've got people in the know who feel that if the world were to know these things, we'd all, you know, we couldn't take it wall. And,
right.
Hey, the
and
first
the religion
one,
as well, you know,
yeah.
The religious stuff.
Exactly. So the first wall falls and, you know, and crumbles everybody, and then there's another one behind it. So if you hit the first wall, you got this other wall.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, again, you never know, because in history, walls like that have come down and no one is expected to see it.
Like the Berlin Wall, you were saying. Yes.
Exactly.
Right.
But at the same token, what your Earth is going to be kind of subtle and quiet when it comes to that. We're going to create an avenue that they can take that doesn't have to be broad-based, advertised all over the world. It's an avenue of volunteer the information, not be forced to disclose information by law. Because I think that's where the challenge is, as I was saying, law is another thing for all these reasons. But to voluntarily come forward with the information without recourse. And it's a quiet avenue. And let me explain what a quiet avenue is.
Yeah.
You may be familiar with this one. Oh, it's an analogy of a quiet avenue. Do you remember there was a law enacted, I think, don't quote me on it exactly, and you know the exact quote, 40 or 50 years ago, it's on a federal level, that if a civilian like you or me or anybody came across a crashed UFO, even though the government denies these things exist, but if you were to come across the crashed UFO and not tell the proper authorities, you're subject to a $10,000 fine and 10 years in jail.
I didn't know that. That's a law?
Yeah. And it even got worse. If you interacted with anything that might be in there, okay, then the penalties were even stiffer, and it was
really?
In the it's in the manual. I've got that in the DVD. It defines it actually.
The manual. What manual is
it's
that?
It's the manual for the government manual for in case there's martial law or a climatic event like a major global or united, like maybe a nuclear thing, or it's an outline for if all the bad things that if they were could happen, a natural disaster and so on and so forth. What agencies handle it, and what law, what martial laws, and what the laws would be in the event climatic things were to take calamity were to take place. And it's common sense that the government should have a manual like that, because what if there was a volcano that erupted and blew up half the country, God forbid?
Well, I know
what do we do
for pandemics, the bird flu pandemic. He did talk about that kind of manual that the government has put together for some emergency situation.
Exactly. And in there, there's that law. If you come across a crashed UFO and you don't report it, then you're subject to these penalties. Okay. Now,
almost funny, though. But anyway,
it is. But that's how I'm seeing the amnesty thing. So you create this amnesty bill that, in essence, almost in a, not in a shouting manner, but a low-key manner. So here you have your scapegoat avenue. Here you have, what is that term people use? Loophole. Loophole,
yeah.
So to speak, but it's a legitimate one that's there. Okay, it exists. That doesn't mean they're going to jump on it the first month. That mean,
uh-huh.
doesn't mean they're going to jump on it the first year. But it just as low-key as that other stupid law was, okay, that if you came across something like that, there are people, in fact, you investigate a little bit, there's researchers who can quote what it is.
Uh-huh.
I'm horrible about things like that sometimes. But, in fact, I think just, it was 5 years ago they repealed a part of it, saying that they lifted the how many years you can be imprisoned, or took that part away, or you know you'd be punished in some other way, because
right.
there were researchers who were harping on the government as, hey, if you're saying that ETs don't exist, why do you have some law that says if you were to interact with them, you're in trouble?
Yeah. Well,
you know,
I know it's ridiculous because they,
moron,
I mean,
right?
the government does know they exist and
yeah.
they have those crafts. But anyway, so the idea behind all that is what. About that
oh,
manual.
The point I'm making with the amnesty thing is everybody has their good the people that want disclosure have all their good intentions and legal and genius minds, and I back them. I back these people. Don't get me
yeah.
wrong. I support them. But the angle that we're coming from is let's pass something that, in a sense, once it's there, it stays there in a low-key way. It's not a focal point, but it's there. It's an escape route. It's an avenue.
Pass
so,
the amnesty stuff, you're saying.
Yeah, and even though it might be ridiculous, like, oh, yeah, all right, we'll pass it because we know these things don't exist kind of thing.
No, Stephen Bassett at the last ExoPolitics also mentioned the amnesty for the politicians. But it does seem, though, I don't know, they're so deep into that secret government stuff, I don't see why it would be worth it for them to come forward.
Oh,
you know?
Let's think about it now.
Yeah.
And here's the mm-hmm. picture that's shown, is that mm-hmm. There's a growing majority in those black ops that really do want to come out with stuff.
Uh-huh.
There's, but again, they're afraid for their own necks, is one reason. And plus, they want to see a world that's more motivated for the proper use of it when they do come, and they want to make sure that their necks aren't on the line. Another motivation is, what if we start seeing horrific, and I hope to God we don't, climatic changes to the point where it becomes very difficult to go about your daily life because
right.
of environmental problems. So they live here too.
Right.
You know,
I get
so,
that.
Yeah.
I get that. I totally. And I think that's a really good point to know. So I do see, it does seem like the Your Earth Foundation and other organizations that can come together, help clean our environment, unite us as a one planet, as a one people, will be an invitation for galactic minds to be joined, you know, for us to be our doorway into, you know, a greater civilization, right?
Beautiful way to see the picture, and you're right on target.
Right.
And bear in mind, you know, according to them, and then it makes sense to me, and I think it's making sense to you, that we already have the resources necessary on this globe, money and minds, coupled with technology. And because when I say technology, the good part is it's still in the hands of human beings, even if it's black ops and secret. So we're not, excuse me, we're not asking ET to divulge that. We're asking, we're creating an avenue for the technology that human beings possess.
Right.
And then again, that leads to that type of evolved interaction. And I'm very confident in that.
Well, I think it's great work. But let me just, we're almost out of time. I mean, it's great that we had this chance to really get down into the big picture. Are your abductions still happening?
They're evolved.
Evolved into what?
An example I like to give is that I used to, for years, I would scream at them, how come you guys can't be more normal about interaction. You got to come to my home in the middle of the night, pull me out of my bedroom, pull me out of my living room. In some cases, I'm in my car. I don't get any warning, and, you know, and I used to be pretty nasty and adamant about that for years. But things have evolved to, a whole year may go by, and there may not be an abduction, and then the next year there may be two or three. And when they happen, here's an example of one. Don't you know, it's more in line with what I enjoy, which I'm driving my car. I'm going down a highway that's relatively isolated, mm-hmm. not expecting anything. And this one point, this a craft appeared in the sky as a light at a 45-degree angle to my vision in the car to the right. And it just, like, in an instant, was in front of the car, beamed a light, which went into my eyes as I was driving, which I don't think that's too safe, but obviously I didn't get hurt. And it burned an image that in 1 hour where to be. And I did not want to go there, and then it was gone that quick.
It was
and
a particular location, an image of a location.
And it was a scary location. So they leave very little to chance. It was in a swampy area. There's alligators there. There's snakes there.
This is down in Florida somewhere.
Yes, and it's very dark. And I'm just giving an example. This is, I'm pulling one out.
Right.
And my vehicle was in a place that, in other words, where they want you is somewhere they leave as little to chance as possible, where they're not vulnerable. I'm vulnerable, they're vulnerable.
Wait, so you went there, you went to this place, and then what happened?
I was scared. I hated every second of it.
Uh-huh.
And I sat in my car, and at the appointed time, about a 30-footer spherical-shaped craft hovered right over the car. And in that experience, I was not very nice because I had this. It was just it was something I was wanting to publish and get out at that time, which now it's out, but. And it was a piece of work, and I was screaming at him, like, how come I don't get no help from you guys, and yada-yada-yada-yada, just screaming in the car. Just things hovering over the car.
Right.
And then the telepathic message said, your emotions are getting in the way of us receiving the information you're trying to give us. We're going to do something to fix that. And I just felt everything just draw right out of my mind, and I blacked out. When I regained consciousness, the door was shutting. I saw the arm of a gray and the body of a gray shutting the door and running and scurrying off. And then the craft wasn't there, so it wasn't hovering over, so they must have had it down on the ground there somewhere. So apparently, I do get these blackout periods from time to time, even though that's why I say 95%, I get these in this case.
Was that a recent experience?
That experience was a few years ago, but that gives you the gist of how they've evolved.
But have you had some recently?
Well, there's something that's going on now that, and I don't mind talking about it somewhat publicly.
Okay.
That's a little bit close to the vest, and I'm just starting to see where. I've heard stories from other abductees about sort of like almost like a city or a mothership or something like that out in
where lots of I heard they all actually they don't live on planets, they live on their ships.
Well, I don't know if that's the case or not. But see, here's how I am. So, because you're noticing me kind of stall a little bit when I respond to this.
Yeah.
And I think when I met you last year, I was kind of this. Was that the beginning of the year or the end of last year when we met?
That was just in the summer sometime.
Wasn't that long ago?
Yeah,
where were we?
Whenever.
Conference was that?
That was the San Jose UFO conference I met you at.
Was it the San Jose one?
Yeah.
Or was that?
Wasn't that the San Jose? Yeah, you were at the San Jose one. Yeah, that was the one.
No, I was not. I was
you
never. I spoke at MUFON early this year.
I thought and, where did I meet you? Didn't we tape you in California? We did that interview with you in California?
Yeah, that would have been closer, I think, to the beginning of the year.
Anyway, whenever it was.
Yeah, all right. But what my point I'm making here is, I may have told you then, I didn't mean to elaborate on that so much,
okay.
I was trying to get focused. Here's how Jim Sparks' approach to divulging information, which I'm open to doing, but here's how I am. I'm getting interaction in a way that I'm much more comfortable with as to how we meet. And what I normally let happen is when I have an experience, and however that interaction was conducted, I let sometimes 2, 3, or more months go by, and sometimes upwards to a year, to let the trail run cold before I divulge or describe what happened.
Yeah, you did mention something like that.
Yeah, because you're going to have, I don't want to put anything in the way to spoil how these things are happening, because it's evolved to the point where it's a heck of a lot more comfortable with me. There's another side of me, and this is just the way I am, and I kind of have this stubbornness, and I've had throughout this thing, is that says, before you go public with things, Jim, do your best to make sure that it is clear and concise, and at least you have an understanding or a grip of the gist of what that was about. So what I do want to throw out there kind of as a tease to everybody.
If we have the capacity to figure out what it's about, because you said we only know it's small percentages.
And then at the same time, I like to let the trail run cold.
Right, okay, I gotcha. So go ahead.
For all kinds of reasons. But what I'm seeing and starting to see, and I haven't concluded yet, is that there are human beings, and I don't know how long this is, it's an agenda that's been going on, and I don't know how long, but normal, regular human beings who are actually born, raised in an environment that is akin to, and it's going to sound like a satellite or a city in deep space. And on occasion, these people are, they're human, wholly human. These people are brought down in groups to intermingle with what their basics are, which are here, the world. It's almost like a tour, in a sense. They dress them in clothes that are current with the times. And interestingly enough, they bring them to, did I mention this stuff to you when I saw you then?
No, I don't think so.
And this has been going on a couple years, and I'll be writing about it. In fact, I started to write about it, and that'll be in the next book.
And they bring them where, are you saying?
Just like, almost like you would, what's phenomenal is they bring them to the most public places that, for example, I'm going to make something up. They would bring them to a Disneyland, or they would bring them to a very popular beach resort where they would blend in with tourists and not stand out so they can get a sense of their roots.
Yeah, well, you know, David Jacobs talked about this about 6 months ago in New York.
I did not know that.
Yes,
I did
not
know that.
He even showed a picture of one of these guys who went on a fishing trip with this abductee, and they were hanging out, and this guy has met this person a couple of times, and he happened to show up in a photograph. Very ordinary looking person, but he was out on a fishing trip. One of these types of real human looking ETs, and David Jacobs has a whole understanding of that.
Yeah, but there's those kind too. There's some that are wholly human that were never raised here.
Yeah.
And they're brought back to interact. I guess, Bobby, it's just good for them in general to know what their stock, what they're from.
Uh-huh.
And then there is individuals who are not wholly human. They're telepathic. They look very much human. In fact, you'd have to really look at them real close, and you'll start noticing some differences that apparently will call, share a couple of things, and it's... these things are flowering in this interaction, and I'm not comfortable until I'm comfortable. So I'm vague about it, but yeah. So if Jacob said that there is that, and I also know there are something similar to something that's partially human, mostly human, and partially ET, are telepathic.
Well, one thing I do want to ask you about, and then we'll probably.
I should, because
One thing that I've been dealing with over my abduction is this female, the female gray type creatures, but one female in particular was seemed very ancient, very like the queen bee. And I had some kind of interaction with her, with the, this mass production of beings, but that and also the idea that many, many men seem to be accompanied by a particular female ET. Is that, has that been your experience?
I've seen female ETs in this manner. For whatever reason, these eyes only get to see what I perceive to be as male. And when I, when, particularly when we talk about grays, but there have been occasions that definitely I've seen a feminine gray.
Even in sexual interactions, you know, because there is that sexual component.
And it was that not just the sexual; it was emotional.
Uh-huh.
There was because one thing these guys did not express with me and do not express with me, I see a cynical sense of humor, but that's about as close as to emotion that I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
From time to time, cynical sense of humor, but. The times that I've seen the feminine, what I perceive to be the feminine side or feminine gray, they're smaller, they're gentler. Even in their telepathic communication, there's the way they handle you or they ask, in a sense, how you doing, you know, things of that nature, which is something that the grays in their mannerism, they just they don't do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They're very business-like and bop, 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 and that's it.
But
where
you
I have
would say you didn't have a relationship, but like a personal with one particular one.
But hey, man, I had to, I was handled by so many different ones in so many different ways in these last 20 years. It makes my head spin.
So,
it really does, Alan. It makes my head spin.
Are you anticipating, I suppose you are, more encounters?
Here's what I've learned throughout the years, that it's need to know. As long as I'm carrying on in a way that's productive and progressive and going in the right direction, then it's like there's no interaction. I'm left alone. And then it, when it gets to areas where it's a need to know, boom, there's interaction.
So are you putting all your energy now into the Your Earth Foundation? Is that
it's
where your whole focus?
It's my full-time work. My business, I think when you first met me, and you were graciously supportive in many ways. I had made the decision, I think a couple of months prior to when I met you, that my business was legal tax relief, and I also handled debt settling. That was my company.
Uh-huh.
And that occupied over 60 hours of my hours a week, sometimes more. And so what I did was I made the decision to make this my full-time work and then filter out the business. So I'm an author. I got the book published. I got the DVD out. I'm writing another one.
Right.
So, you know, when it's the sales of books and the lectures and the talks and stuff like that, which is supporting me now, barely, but, you know, that's the decision I made, but I didn't have time to do it full. So as long as this is, can support me, then I can devote 100% full-time to it, plus. If it gets to the point where it can't, and I'm a person of humble means, if it can't, you know, then I'm going to have to get back into business. But I'm thinking positive, and I feel like it's going to sustain me. So to answer your question, yes, it's full-time.
It's such an important thing. I can't see how it could not support you and the efforts, because it's not for you. It's for all of us. So I mean,
it is. I'm committed to that. That's what I'm
committed
to.
I think there couldn't be a higher calling for you to pursue than to save the planet. I mean, for all of us.
Well, you know what, I try to think of everybody, but you can't think of everybody, and I try to think of the minds that think like, oh, this person's doing this for money, or this person's doing this for this, or this person's doing that for that, and I just stay really extra sensitive to that stuff. I mean, money is something we all need to pay the rent and pay the mortgage, because if you don't, they're going to put you out in the street. I mean,
yeah, but it's because of
reality.
Your abduction experience, you saw a bigger picture of who you really were, and it's because of your interactions that
it absolutely
changed.
Yeah, it absolutely changed my priorities.
That's right, and you know, money's not as important as saving the human race.
It's not.
I mean, I know it sounds almost like a science fiction movie, but it's where it all comes from.
I have lived and I can live very comfortably pursuing what my business is, and I'm in a whole different world when it comes to this. But I just don't look at things the same, because they, once, like you said, once enlightened, then you just you have a different take and it changes your priorities. So,
well, Jim, thanks for all the work you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me on, and I thank you for the opportunity to have to be able to converse in depth as you have and get more into what's going on and get past the what do they look like and, you know, that kind of stuff. And
well, that's just
really
101. We have to get beyond that to get there because I think you've had access to real, I wasn't going to say top secret, but real exclusive information because of your conscious abduction experience.
Very open. Yes, very open. I don't mean to override you, but very open when it comes to the human aspect of it that's in conjunction with ET, which is the military, paramilitary, black ops. Hey, I'm not saying they're 100% privy to everything they do, because I'm not, but when the interaction is taking place, these people just, they don't hide themselves. It kind of really amazes me. But then I'm really strong about not memorizing their faces and who they are.
Oh, you don't memorize their faces?
No, I do my best not to, and I don't know their names or anything like that. And when there's interactions like that, it could be brief, or sometimes it's at a distance in a room. But clearly one will see that there's people involved here. So
are they only U.S. military or are they other
government? I've seen others. I've seen, again, it may be just paramilitary, too, so I've got to be real careful with that, you know, because then people are thinking Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force. Paramilitary meaning an agency of that, but nonetheless, which branch, you know, who knows.
Right.
But yes, I've seen Asian, I've seen Hispanic.
Right.
From
those countries.
From those parts of the world, yeah.
Right.
When I say Asian, it could cover China, it can cover, you know, any part of Asia.
Right.
And I've seen Hispanic, and I've seen, you know, black.
Right.
I've seen definitely the majority are American in my experiences, the majority, but I've seen different groups. And German, by the way. That's stuck out too for whatever reason.
Well,
German.
It's fascinating times that we're in, and you know, it seems like, you know, this information is right at the forefront of change, of Earth change in a very positive way. I really think the UFO experience and the UFO phenomena is here to help us on all levels of our consciousness.
Haven't we got to do it first? So if we can get your listeners to, it would be supporting them, it would be supporting our work if we can get them on that Jim hyphen or Jim Dash, whatever you're more comfortable with, sparks.com. I couldn't get Jim Sparks, that was taken already. We put together something for your listeners. They'll see
okay, that's great.
That.
This show is going to be archived as well, so it'll be on the BBSradio.com website, and you just go to archives under New Realities.
Yeah, so we're broadcasting live at the moment, and then you archive it? Is that how you work?
I'll archive it. I'll also archive it on my website, my NewRealities.com website. You can archive it on your website if you want to, and I mean, just to have people have a reference for that. So, thanks. So, jim-sparks.com is how to find you.
Yeah.
And Your Earth doesn't have a website yet.
No, but we're getting close. And, you know, I hate to throw all these sites, but if the jim-sparks888@yahoo, if you want to just give me a yell, or I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but drop a line about, you know, it can be a yell. Drop a line regarding, you know, how you might feel that you would like to involve yourself on the Earth thing, but you can. And again, we're collecting that. And I'll respond to them all inevitably. I start from the latest and, you know, work my way up. And then, of course, we're going to have people who goes over all of it. And when Your Earth is going.
Your Earth. Okay, so give us updates. You know, if you get the hit to call and come back and tell us, like, what's happening, I totally welcome that.
Well, great. Thank you for that. I will do that.
Absolutely. No, it's exciting stuff. And
great.
Any abductions, let us know about that, too.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for that opportunity and that offer. I'll take advantage of it.
Okay. So be
for
in touch anyway.
Sake.
You have my number anyway.
Yep.
I'm gonna end with this song, Neil Young, After the Gold Rush. You know that last verse?
Sure.
He talks about the ship, the silver spaceship coming.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks,
that's
Jim.
Cool. Okay.
I'll talk to you.
All right. Thank you. Enjoy this.
This is New Realities with Alan Steinfeld, And if you want to reach me, I'm at newrealities@earthlink.net. You could check out my website, which is newrealities.com or newrealities.tv. On the newrealities.com, you can look at other podcasts I have from my BBS radio show. So thank you for listening, and here is a little tribute to Jim and his work. And it's After the Gold Rush, Neil Young.